Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's see what we have on the docket today. First, an example of why chain of custody matters. It's a little pet peeve that I've had. Second, Murdoch is officially a person of interest. Alec Murdoch is officially a person of interest. Ghislaine Maxwell has a tentative sentencing date. What does that mean? Alec Baldwin finally gets around to complying with that subpoena, and then our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. Before we get to the docket, some quick housekeeping matters. First, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button and also hit that little bell so you receive notifications when we go live or put up new content. As a reminder, tomorrow night we will go live, Tuesday, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Please join us. And then immediately following that, we have our Patreon show for all of our Patreon members where you can actually call in and continue the conversation, so to speak. Also, please do not forget, if you cannot watch us on YouTube or Facebook, you can always download us at your favorite podcasting app and just type in Crime Talk with Scott Reich and you will find us and you can listen to us anytime. Take us on that walk with the dog. Listen to us at work, doing whatever you're doing. Please listen to us. And just a little note, we have now went over the 600,000 downloads for Crime Talk, which may not seem like a lot. I'm sure there's a lot of people to get 600,000 downloads in one sitting. I guess if you're like Joe Rogan, you get that. That's a piece of cake. But for the rest of us, that's a pretty significant number, given the number of podcasts that there are out there in the world. All right, let's get to the docket. This has been a little pet peeve of mine for years, and judges just don't seem to get it because, frankly, they just don't want to think about it. But chain of custody matters. And so I want to talk about a case that came out from the Colorado Court of Appeals. Wasn't my case, but this is kind of a summary of the facts. Came out just last week, but I think it's significant because it explains the importance of chain of custody. I've been making this argument for a while. Let's go through the facts, what the court said, and I'll tell you why it's significant. All right. So this is the case of People v. Rodriguez. All right. And the facts are that basically after a traffic stop, the passenger, Mr. Rodriguez, took off running with the officers in hot pursuit. Now, during the foot race, Rodriguez discarded a baggie containing a white powdery substance. What could that have been? The officers caught Mr. Rodriguez and Officer Gardner recovered the baggie, who handed it to Sergeant Manzanilla. Now, Rodriguez is convicted of possession of the white powdery substance, which, of course, was cocaine. So the issue is up on appeal. First, the authentication of the baggie of cocaine. So at trial, the prosecution presented as Exhibit 1 a Colorado Springs Police Department evidence bag containing a clear plastic baggie with a white powdery substance. A police chemist testified that he picked up Exhibit 1 from the police evidence section, tested the substance, turned out to be about an ounce of cocaine, resealed the bag with blue tape, dated it, marked it with the case number, item number, and his initials, and returned it to the evidence section. That's pretty normal what the evidence people do. There was little doubt that Exhibit 1 was a plastic baggie that contained cocaine. The only question was whether the plastic baggie of cocaine in Exhibit 1 was the plastic baggie containing the white powdery substance recovered after they caught Mr. Rodriguez. This is where it gets good. Now, the chemist testified that he did not know who placed the baggie of white powdery substance in evidence or where the item had been prior to the time that it had been picked up for testing. The government didn't call Sergeant Manzanilla to testify. Instead, they relied on Officer Gardner, who acknowledged that he had no idea what happened to the baggie he picked up after he handed it to Manzanilla. So the prosecutor showed Gardner and asked if he recognized the baggie. And of course, Gardner testified, "Why, yes, that is the specific baggie that I recovered after Rodriguez discarded it." And the trial court found that that was sufficient to authenticate the evidence. Well, the Court of Appeals disagreed. Now, true, some evidence may be authenticated by testimony that the object is what the proponent claims, but that is when proffered evidence is unique, readily identifiable, and relatively resistant to change. And a baggie of a white powdery substance is not unique, readily identifiable, or resistant to change. And Officer Gardner could not rely on the writings or the notations of the Colorado Springs police evidence bag because he had no personal knowledge of how the baggie got into the evidence bag, let alone how the writing got on the bag. Thus, relying on the writing on the bag would run afoul of the hearsay prohibition of Exhibit 1, and it could not be authenticated. So instead, when the evidence as here is not readily identifiable and is susceptible to alteration by tampering or contamination, the proponent of the evidence must authenticate it by establishing a chain of custody. That's right. And the chain of custody method of authentication requires that the proponent of the real evidence establish that the evidence was involved in the incident and the condition of the evidence at trial is substantially unchanged. And so to do so, the proponent of the evidence must introduce evidence showing where the items had been seized and where it has been until it was initially offered at trial. And here, the evidence was not accounted for at all times. In fact, after the initial seizure, evidence was not accounted for at all. Now, since Officer Gardner's testimony was insufficient and the chain of custody contained a fatal break, the prosecution failed to lay the foundation sufficient to support the finding of the jury that Exhibit 1 contained what the proponents, the prosecutor, claimed it to be, the bag of white powdery substance that Officer Gardner retrieved from the scene after Rodriguez discarded it. The trial court therefore erred by admitting the evidence, and the error was not harmless. Thus, reversal was required. Now, like I said, this is not my case, but I've been making this argument for years, and it's nice to see that finally something stuck at the Court of Appeals, because for so long, the district attorney would have blanks, and you would voir dire the witness on the stand saying, there's all this writing on here. Do you know how it got here? Do you know who picked it up? Who brought it here? Who brought it there? They would have no idea. And the judge would say, oh, Mr. Reich, why are you getting so bogged down on those little nuances of the case? Well, Judge, because chain of custody matters. And it looks like in the case of Mr. Rodriguez, the Court of Appeals has finally breathed a little life back into chain of custody. And now the judges can't simply say, it goes to its weight, not its admissibility, which basically means let the jury decide if they think it's credible or not. Finally, chain of custody comes back into importance in criminal law. Thank goodness. Let's hope all judges begin to follow it. Next on the docket, Alex Murdoch. He's officially a person of interest in connection with the criminal investigation of the Dummel homicide, which claimed the lives of his wife, 52-year-old Maggie Murdoch, and the younger son, Paul Murdoch. Now, recent reports indicate that there is physical evidence linking Murdoch directly to the shootings, although no one has been arrested in connection with that investigation. Next on the docket, Ghislaine Maxwell. The court has set a tentative sentencing date for June 28th of this year for Ghislaine Maxwell to be sentenced. What is the significance of that? Yes, it is a tentative date because all dates are tentative in the court world because things come up all the time. But what it means is that the court is probably not inclined to grant Ghislaine Maxwell a new trial based upon the information that the court knows about thus far. Now, the court hasn't set a motions hearing date, and no pleadings, at least that we've been made aware of, have been released to the public regarding the further extent of the alleged juror misconduct. But a couple things can be taking place. First, the judge needs to set a sentencing date so that the pre-sentence investigation report can be prepared. And two, like I said, it also indicates that the court may not be inclined to grant Ghislaine Maxwell a new trial. We'll have to wait and see, but that's usually what that means. The court wants to move their docket along. Next, Alec Baldwin. Remember him? That's right. Well, he has officially surrendered his cell phone to the authorities as part of an investigation into the fatal shooting on the New Mexico film set last fall. Now, the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office spokesperson, Juan Rios, said that Mr. Baldwin's phone was turned over Friday to law enforcement officials in Suffolk County, New York, who will gather the information from the phone and provide it to the Santa Fe County investigators. Now, Baldwin's lawyer, Aaron Dyer, said his client has been cooperating with authorities throughout the course of the investigation, and the delay in providing the information from the phone was no indication otherwise. As you may have noted, it was almost a month from the time that the subpoena went out till the time that he complied with that subpoena. The attorney did make a statement saying Alec voluntarily provided his phone to the authorities this morning so that they can finish their investigation. It's also said, but this matter isn't about his phone. There are no answers on his phone. Now, Mr. Baldwin, who has denied any wrongdoing in the shooting, said on an Instagram message on January 8th that the New Mexico needed to go through the New York law enforcement and that the process of specifying exactly what is needed took time. They can't just go through your phone and take your photos or your love letters to your wife or whatever you have on the phone. And I totally agree with that. Any subpoena is just like a warrant. It has to be very specific in its nature. So I get that. And that's probably as to what was the cause for the delay. Now, as you may recall, no charges have been filed in the fatal shooting, and investigators are trying to find out the source of the live round, which obviously caused the death of one person and seriously injuring another. And next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. But who do you think came in as far as the dumb criminal for last week? That's right. It was Michael Cornada, the guy that used THC butter to bake some brownies that his mom took to the old folks home and apparently made everybody sick and super high. So good on you, Michael. You'll always be a winner. Although somehow I think you're maybe not a winner in life, but we'll see. At least you're a winner here. All right. Today's dumb criminal. Authorities have been searching for a suburban Chicago inmate who was allowed to leave jail to attend a family member's funeral but didn't return. 23-year-old Bruce Barrier left DuPage County Jail on Tuesday at 8 a.m. Court documents said he was supposed to return to jail by 2 p.m. but did not. Police found Barrier's ankle monitor at the Arlington Cemetery in Elmhurst, and Barrier was sentenced to 10 years in prison back in July of 2021 when he pled guilty to gun charges. The police have no indication as to his current location because he removed his ankle monitor, and therefore, what can I tell you? He is at large. Let me just tell you, ladies and gentlemen, leaves to attend funerals, furloughs from prison sentences are the worst things ever. One, people oftentimes don't come back unless you actually pay for the sheriff to escort the person to the funeral and come home. So my experience is that somebody is released and they get a little taste of freedom. Suddenly they become very irrational when it comes to looking at their case and they don't look at it objectively. All they know is they had a little taste of freedom and they don't want to go back to prison, which can sometimes make them make poor decisions in their overall case. For all the judges out there, and I know people want to be there for various events in their lives, and sometimes furloughs are appropriate, but they create more issues than they actually solve, I assure you of that. All right, thanks for watching. That's all we have for you today. Please join us tomorrow for our live program, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. We'll see you there. Thanks for watching Crime Talk.